Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 19th, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast there is in the world. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. Warm and toasty today. Tomorrow, freezing.
Oh, that's right. You're going to Minnesota.
Freezing.
Well, we had a phone call with some of our sales reps who live up in that area, and I was like, how's it going? He goes, well, how's the weather down there? And I'm like, mid-80s. And he goes, F you in your mid-80s. He said, it's freezing up here. I said, there's no way. He said, yeah. I said, how can it still be cold up there?
It's April. It's not even like early April.
I know.
Late onset April right now. There's no way they should be having 8 to 12 inches of snowstorms coming through there.
And then the other thing I think about, too, is the Vikings are building an outside stadium. What are they thinking?
It's got to be that way. I mean, you gotta play football outside in the frozen tundra. But but little old Ante Up sissies like me should not be subjected to snow and cold on April 19th.
No, you should not be.
But looking forward to getting up there for the Running Aces Ante Up Poker Tour event still going on. So if folks... or in the area, come out. I will be on site Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and a little bit on Monday as well, too. And our good friends from Fifth Street Radio will be there. Poker Geek's there. Poker Geek actually made a final table already.
In yes.
One of the big events. Biggest event so far.
Yes, he's been being a loyal tweeter as well, and been retweeting his stuff and learning about how he's doing his exploits. So nice job, Geek. Way to go. Way to keep the Ante Up Nation relevant. But speaking of things being subjected to that we really shouldn't be, I got to tell you, I think that I'm the only person in the whole world who absolutely hates open-faced Chinese poker.
I think you are correct.
I think I am. I can't stand the game, Scott. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
I absolutely
hate
it. And I will go on record to say that you will never see me playing this for money. Ever. I will not play it for money. If somebody were on the cruise and somebody's like, let's play Chinese, I'll be like, I'll play Chinese. And I'm like, oh, open face. See you later. Give me back to the 3-6 ho game. I try playing this game a lot, and I've played it on, I have a few apps too, mm-hmm. where I play it on the apps. And I absolutely love and hate the game at the same time. What I love about it is that it's more like poker than Chinese poker. I like the idea of keeping track of cards and stuff, whereas in Chinese, you don't do that. You just set your hand, and maybe there's tendencies of the other person that you know you can get away with putting ace 10 up top or something like that. But open face at least feels a lot more like real poker to me in the sense that I get to, like, a stud game where you can keep track of cards and that kind of thing. But I absolutely hate the game. Hate it with a passion. And I would imagine that eventually you may do a show talking about this or have somebody who's really good at it on the show or something to that nature. So I don't want to get in too much into the whole what's good, what strategies there are. There's actually a pretty decent amount of strategy things out there about this now. One guy has a blog that's pretty good. I don't really recall it because I didn't study the blog or anything, but if you type into Google open face Chinese strategy, you'll find it. And I hate it. I hate the game, Scott. I absolutely do. And I think it's because I often misset my hands, which I know is the peril of the game and the beauty of the game and all that crap. But I hate it. I hate it. And I don't know what is so appealing about it. I really don't.
Wow. Well, I know what's appealing about it. What I guess I'm trying to figure out is why you hate it so much.
I just don't like it. I don't like maybe it's because I so much like the other version that... You know, I like to be able to just... That's the whole reason I play that game, is to make the hands.
Mm-hmm.
And to play open face, you're never making hands. And when you finally do, yeah, you'll get paid off. But it's like, I'm constantly making like nine high on top, a pair of sixes in the middle, and two pair on the bottom, and either getting scooped or I'm missetting my hand and getting scooped anyway, and then paying royalties on top of it. I hate it. I hate the game.
Wow.
Yeah.
Here, you know, I'm gonna guesstimate here as to why you hate it so much.
Okay, go ahead.
And why I love it so much. In my heart, am a gambler.
Yeah.
You, in your heart, are anti-gambling.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why you like poker, because it's not really gambling. It's, you know, it's...
skill.
You know, mano a mano. And open-faced poker forces you to gamble.
Yeah.
You gotta... I mean, there's obviously a lot of strategy involved in, you know, where you put your cards and, you know, what the odds are of hitting something. You know, do you go for a royalty knowing that you're going to... have a bigger risk of mishitting your hand and getting really squashed. So there's definitely a lot of strategy in it. But at the end of the day, it's the gamble in you, I think, that gets exciting. I mean, I was waiting for my Chinese food yesterday, and I was playing a couple rounds on my app, and got down to where the last card, I needed a 10 to make my straight on the bottom.
Yeah.
Or my hand would be misset. And if I hit the straight, obviously that's a royalty, a very small royalty, but still one. And bam! Bingo, bango, Ricky, Tiki, Tavi. 10 peeled off. And the whole Chinese restaurant was like, well, why is that guy going crazy? And it was because it was just so awesome to hit that one outer. Actually, three outer, four outer, whatever it was at that point. But I built myself into this corner, which I shouldn't have done, obviously.
Yeah.
And then you're sitting there open. But, you know, at some point during some hands, you make a call. And you're right, we'll do a longer show. We'll get somebody on here that plays it more than I do. Talk about the strategy, but you know, there are times when I'll put a small pair up on top early on, and just I'm playing the odds that I'm going to be able
to beat them, to
get there. And then it's at that point, then it's just making a decision. Oh, now I got this card. Do I put it on the bottom or the middle? And then you know, when it all comes together, it is like running a kickoff back for a touchdown. I'm guessing, because I never did, because I was too scrawny to play football, but. Yeah, I would think it's that euphoria that you can't get anywhere else. And, you know, in Chinese poker, normal Chinese poker, you don't get that euphoria. I mean, the only euphoria you get really is, you know, if you look at your cards and like, oh my gosh, I got a straight flush here.
Yeah.
Or something like that just doesn't happen very often. But it's not like you're going to be stupid and go, I'm going to break my straight flush, you know? But, so you need to have that gamble, so you have those highs and lows, I guess, is what it's like. I mean, for me, it's a lot like playing craps. I know those people just hate playing craps. I'm like, you know, you're losing, but, you know, when the dice are hot.
Yeah.
And I'm not superstitious, because dice are never hot. But when they're hitting, that is the most excitement you'll ever have in a casino. And when they're not, that's the quickest you'll lose your money in the casino. And I think it's the same with the open face. If you're hitting your hands, you know, you get these royalties, and then you get into this whole fantasy land thing, you're very happy. And when you're missing them, and you're missetting, and people are getting royalties on you, it sucks. So, highs and lows. It's like a roller coaster.
You
kind of prefer the little Stanleyville train at the amusement park.
Well, you know, when you first started to say that you're going to take a guess as to why I don't like it and why you do like it, I was like, you're not going to get it. But you pretty much got it. You pretty much nailed it on the head. I really don't dig the whole crapshoot of hoping to get your card. It's like you're playing bingo now. I know there's strategy, and when you see somebody clearly going to miss at their hands, you just make an easy hand that doesn't foul and whatever. But, I mean, I always want to go for it, too. That's my other thing. I know it's funny that you say I don't have gamble. I mean, I really don't. I don't like to gamble. But when I'm playing that game, I want to make two flushes and a pair. You know, I try for it, and I end up, I'm like negative 50 by the time the game's over. You play one of the apps is like 10 hands. You play a round of 10 hands, and you see how you do at the end or whatever. And I'm always either blowing the person out of the water or getting blown out of the water. But it's always the latter. And there's just no way that I can enjoy this game. And the reason I bring it up today, actually, is not because I'm randomly bringing it up. We actually had one of our local pros here who tours and has been seeing the open-faced Chinese just blow up everywhere on tour on the circuit. She wrote in and said, hey, this thing is going really well. You guys should have something about it in the magazine. And I'm like, well, why don't you write a little tutorial for us about how to play? So she did, and it's in our newest issue, our May issue, which is going to hit stands this week. It's the pages are on the press right now. So it's an interesting little piece. It's a short piece. It really basically just explains the game, and there's a little bit of strategy. And it's funny, the one strategy note that I've always embraced was the straight on the bottom, try not to do it. And you're talking about that's what you were doing in the Chinese restaurant. Because if you miss it, you have to pay everybody. And if you make it, you only get a royalty of two anyway. So is it really worth doing it? And the royalties are kind of random, too. I think they're... It's weird how who just decided those are the royalties, but...
that's right.
But anyway, yeah, I think that, you know, if you guys pick up our latest issue, our May issue, you'll be able to... If you don't know anything about the game, you'll be able to read about it on there and check out what the royalties pay. There's a little chart for it and everything, and I think she had a little fun with it. I mean, not a lot of strategy in it, because really, you know, that could literally fill an issue, I think, if you had someone who was willing to write it, you know, and good enough at it. But I'm really not going to play the game. I'm really not. So on our next cruise, which we'll obviously talk about later on the show, you know, if we're sitting around playing Chinese, I won't play Open Face. I just won't. It's too frustrating and too... Why would I want to frustrate the hell out of myself like that when I could go play poker? So,
well, you know, Jin, you'll be happy to hear that. You'll be hanging out with her a lot more this cruise.
Yeah, I think so.
We will not be sitting around playing Chinese if it's not Open Face Chinese.
Well, you know what, though? I do have, I believe, an ally on my side in this, because our poker room manager, Ramsey, loves Chinese. And he doesn't like Open Face.
Yeah.
So he's the one who usually gets the Chinese going anyway on the cruise. So maybe I have an ally in this, and I'll be able to play regular Chinese if I play it. But I thought I'd let that out. I've been, you know, and the other thing too is when I was on Fifth Street Radio and they asked me about it, I was embarrassed. I was like, you know, I'm sorry, I just haven't played it. And he was kind of like, huh? You know, like, how could you not play it? So I felt like obligated to learn the game and to give it a shot, and I just can't stand it. So I'm sorry. But something else I can't stand. You know what?
In general?
Everyone knows that I like to watch poker on TV, although it has been waning. I have actually cut back significantly. Maybe it's just because there's not a lot on TV anymore, but just been so busy with the magazine and life in general that poker on TV is... I want to be entertained these days, and... A lot of times I know what's going on in these events already. So it's hard. I mean, it's entertaining, you know, what they're saying and stuff and, you know, whatever. But a lot of times when I'm watching poker on TV now, I already know who won. And it's kind of anticlimactic now. And so I start to watch these other shows now. I watch shows like just regular TV shows. And my wife has a show that she likes called Body of Proof with, I don't know, that Renee, whatever her name is. So, you know, we'll watch it. And that show is getting worse and worse every week. They've already revamped the cast and everything. But this week, I thought it was really hilarious. You know, they had and it's funny because most of the time when I watch these mysteries, I tend to, like, in the first 5 minutes go, yep, that's the person right there. And my wife's like, what? Yeah, he did it. How did he do it? Or whatever. I described the plot like it already happened. And she's like, what are you doing?
It's the candlestick in the library.
Well, you know, it's
so easy.
It's the Will Hopper in me. Obviously, I've written a couple of those kind of books, so I kind of think that way. So last week, or whatever, this week, the show came on, and I said, all right, you know, I'll take a break and watch it with you. And so I'm watching the show, and one of the actors gets killed. And it's a pretty popular actor. Like, he's a character actor that's in a lot of shows, a lot of sitcoms. So I thought to myself, they killed him in the first 2 minutes of the show. And I looked at Jean and I said, he's not dead. She says, what? I said, they faked his death. She goes, they didn't fake his death. You know? And I'm like, no, they faked his death.
Don't do that on TV.
He's too popular of an actor. He's too valuable to bring that guy in for 8 seconds of screen time and never see him again. And it's a fake video. They didn't really kill the guy on video. And she's like, all right. So as we're watching the show, they start to understand that the dental implants in his teeth from the car that got burned were someone else's dental implants, you know, whatever it is, and it turns out they faked his death. So I'm like, yep, chalk one up for Will Hopper here. So as the show goes on, they're trying to unravel if this guy really could be alive somewhere and why. And of course, he owes all this money to people. And then they find out the person who helped him fake his death was a doctor who had run up a poker debt on VivaLaPoker.com.
Viva La Poker!
So first of all, if you're out there hoping that, you know, all this interstate and intrastate poker happens and you can start your own website, well, VivaLaPoker.com is taken. You can't use that name. It's a property of Disney and ABC, I believe, because they totally used VivaLaPoker as the name of the site. So they bring up the site and they're like, yes, this doctor who used to play under his regular name now plays under the alias Phoenix 4891. And they're like, oh, rise from the ashes, because he faked his own death as well. And he got so good at faking his own death that he started to make it a business. So anybody who was in trouble, he could teach them how to fake their death and get paid off for it. So it turns out the guy, the original, the person who started this plan, he literally ran up such a poker debt online, which you can't do. You can't run up a poker debt online, okay? But he ran up such a poker debt online that he faked his own death to get away from his wife and his debt. Awesome. And he did it online. So this is how they caught him. They hack into VivaLaPoker.com.
Of course.
They check his chat history, which, do they even keep the chat history somewhere?
They do on TV.
They do on TV. I mean, I assume maybe they hack. But so they find out who he is, and then they find out how he changed his name, his avatar, whatever you want it, from, like, this is me to Phoenix whatever. And the guy literally just changes his account name on there, and that's how they catch him. They go to his ISP, find out where he's playing, and then they go and find him. And then that's how they arrest the doctor who created this whole thing. And I'm like, yep, poker and all the ignorance of people who don't understand it saves the day again in Hollywood.
You know, that's the number one slip-up in faking your own death is... just changing your screen name.
Just change your screen name. Yeah. That's right.
It happens so often. It's just so sad.
Oh, my God. And it's there are so many things wrong with what they were saying about the online site. You'd have to watch it to hear them. They're like, okay, I'm going through his chat histories now. Ah, here we go. Oh, here's where he changed his name. Oh, here's his ISP now. He's playing right now in this hotel. Go ahead. I mean, or whatever. It was just so ridiculous. And I just got a kick out of it. But, I mean... really, I was really hoping to use VivaLaPoker.com when Annie Epp started its own site someday. Now I'm so depressed.
We're going to start at VivaLaPoker. It's the La de Lee. La. La?
La?
Maybe.
La. I don't know. But really, I really did. And they're also like, oh, that site is still up and running. And I'm like... you know, is it really up and running? You know, I mean, how many sites are really still up and running, you know, two or three now that we, you know, people would even know about? It's just, it was hilarious to me. I thought it was hilarious. And like one of the, you know, the doctors in the medical examiner's office, he's like, hey, that site's still up and running. Like he plays poker and knows about it. You know, it was just so comical the way they do these things to get themselves out of their jams, you know. Or I can't figure out how to fake this guy's death. Let's go. Let's say he had a debt online poker, and oh man. So anyway, TV gets ruined again for me. Unbelievable. Well, you know, we talked about Poker Geek earlier. It's kind of interesting that usually our show does is it goes in waves. We sort of have these people get mentioned, and then all of a sudden they're in the show again, and it's like this theme. It's a Poker Geek theme. Called our hotline this week. 813-448-1120. You call it, we use it. We'll probably give you something. Here's Geek.
Just calling in about the term snowing. I think snowing, you're right, it does mean a bluff, but I've only heard it used in draw games. So another component of it is that you decline the opportunity to improve your hand. In other words, you do not draw. So you have a really crappy hand, so you either have to fold it, but instead you choose to bluff with it and pretend like it's a made happening.
We had somebody else kind of call in and write about this as well, too. And it's a good point, yeah. I mean, I get that we have the opportunity to improve your hand and you choose not to. So it is a subtle difference. Probably not even so subtle.
And if anyone would know about snow, it'd be Geek.
Yes, exactly.
In Minnesota, where it's brr, tomorrow, Scott, have fun.
3 feet of snow in July. And people live there willingly.
Oh, man. I still remember that huge storm when they had it in Buffalo a couple years back, and it was August, and the snow was still piled up in the parking lots. August! Can you believe that? Crazy.
All right, Geek, well, I'll see you pretty soon. Obviously, we've gotten you some swag recently, but we want to remind everyone now some of the great stuff we'll give you if you call the hotline at 813-448-1120, including a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. Ask about the Anti-Up logo version and use code ANTIUP for free shipping.
Mailbag. So Carol writes in, and she's obviously from Florida, which is always cool because we're from Florida.
Well, it's not always cool. It's usually hot.
No, that's true. That's
well,
true.
We prefer it that way.
That's true. She said, just got this via email. What's up with this? She says, just paid a full membership for a year in March to clubwpt.com, which was like 200 some odd bucks, and now they're not refunding her money to her. She wants to know what the deal is. So here's the email. By the way, she loves our show. Dear Club WPT VIP member, because of recent legislation that has just gone into effect in Florida, Club WPT members in Florida are no longer eligible to participate in sweepstakes-style tournaments that award either cash or merchandise. However, your status as Club WPT VIP remains unchanged, meaning you still have full access to all the Club WPT VIP member benefits, including the Entertainment Savers Guide, online access to Bluff and WPT magazines, and full commercial-free episodes of the World Poker Tour. In addition, as a VIP member, you can still enjoy nonstop poker action in our play chip games, where your account is credited with 200,000 play chips each month. We hope you will continue to play, enjoy your time at Club WPT VIP, and look forward to serving you in the future. What are we making of, Scott?
Well, first of all, she sent me a couple follow-up emails where it sounds like now they are going to refund her money and money for other people in Florida, which is the right thing to do.
Good.
What's interesting about this is one of our legal experts had told us as this was working through the legislature that it would not affect online poker or online sweepstakes games. And I'm not a legislative expert enough to know whether that's true or not. So it's very possible that Club WPT's attorneys just are very overly cautious and feel it's better just to, you know, cut off those games and not chance it until they figure it out more. And it's also entirely possible that our expert was incorrect and this stuff is not legal anymore. So, you know, what's very interesting about this is most of our listeners probably live in states where there are these so-called internet cafes, and that's what this legislation was meant to go after, was, you know, shutting down these little smoky window strip malls where you go in and buy internet time and then sit at a computer and try to line up three cherries and get some money and prizes out of it. And but those organizations were operating clearly within the law, the sweepstakes laws. And the sweepstakes laws in most states, I think it's actually 34 states, have very similar sweepstakes laws. And that's what allows the, you know, when you go to McDonald's and get your Shamrock Shake, for them to put the little Monopoly game piece on it.
Yeah.
So they're using the same thing. It's just in a way that probably was not intended by the people that originally wrote the sweepstakes law. So, and then it also kind of blurs into gaming laws. And so, you know, the legislature here was right to clarify this. And it looks like, at least right now, unfortunately, Club WPT members are one of the unintended victims. And we'll just see how it turns out later on.
Yeah, I think we'll continue to follow this, obviously, and we'll actually hear from our expert as well, and see what outcome comes from it. And like I said, I agree with you. I think it might be an overreaction to something, but who knows? Who knows? Like you said, we're not experts, so. We obviously can't lend an expert opinion on it, but I believe that this is just an overreaction. And you know what else, too? It's like, you know, online poker itself, you know, that wasn't ever illegal either. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, that the UIGEA may have made transactions or whatever that were illegal with bankings and all that stuff, but the actual online poker, there's no bill or law or anything that says playing online poker is illegal. So why would this site be illegal when it's even more to the sweepstakes side than anything? So I think it's just an overreaction.
Yeah, well, I mean, they did change the law pretty drastically. In fact, actually, they were people worried that, like, Chuck E. Cheese wasn't going to be able to offer, you know, thing. So they added some things in there to, you know, as long as the prize is no more than 75 cents and doesn't accumulate over time. And I think that's probably the problem with the online is that, you know, the prizes are going to be more than 75 cents. They, you know, they need to accumulate over time for you to get anything of anything value. So that's probably what the attorneys for this site are looking at. I haven't actually heard from any of the other sweepstakes sites that operate here on whether they also are pulling out. So, but yeah, we'll definitely keep her eye on it. And you know, Carol was most disappointed because she's trying to become a better player.
Yeah.
And wanted to play on here and get better. So we're going to help as much as we can here, Carol. And we are going to send you a copy of the Pod Odds Made Simple seminar from poker instructor Thomas Gallagher, which can be downloaded to any mobile device. Our listeners can get their own by mentioning Ante Up at poker911.net. And remember to send your mailbags to podcast@anteupmagazine.com.
I'm going to let you read the feedback because it's so sweet.
I'm choking up again. Well, you know, on, I believe it was last week's show, right? Did this long rambling about how the mailbox that I bought my first tournament winnings had sentimental value and asked some of our listeners if they had something else. And by golly, Brad wrote in and said, I hear what you're saying, Scott. I agree. And here's what he wrote in. He said, I was 15 years old in 2003. My mom had just got us our first computer. 2003. See, my first computer was a Commodore VIC-20. This one was probably like, what, a Dell Inspiron, Big Tower, Mac with an Intel processor. So he continues to say, I taught myself poker, installed Ultimate Bet. I just played free rolls for about a month or so. After a bit, I had cash enough to place 1 cent, 2 cent, no limit. From there, built it up enough to play a dime, quarter, no limit. I did this until I was playing 1-2, no limit. Yeah, that's a pretty big game, I
thought. Yeah.
He said, I had no idea about bankroll management or anything. You're no different than anyone else I've ever met. So every time I moved up, I was pretty much playing with my entire bankroll. I ran really good, though. Ended up about 400 in the account. I said, this Smith Smart might be illegal, not sure. My brother was 19 at the time, so he brought his laptop over, created an account with his debit card, and deposited 40 bucks. We sat heads up at 1-2, and I bled my entire bankroll to him. He withdrew all of it, got the check. I gave him 100 bucks for the help. Nice rate.
That's nice.
I probably went out and bought a PlayStation 2 and a few games. I still have that system and I'm attached to it in the same way you are to the mailbox. It reminds me that making money is fun and I should try and take it from people while playing poker. Since then, I've gotten more things to my winnings, but the PS2 will probably stick out more than anything else. Thanks for reading. Good luck with the mailbox. And there's no doubt I would try to repair that PS2 if something ever happened to it.
Aww. How sweet.
Of course, I wrote back, and I'm like, you probably know this now, but you could have just transferred the money to your brother.
I know.
Take a rake on it. And he's like, yes, you know, we're all young and not one of their former young.
You know, I recall actually repairing a PS2 myself, but it was because I was cheap, not because I was sentimental. But if you have any trouble fixing it someday, give me a call, Brad. I'll tell you everything I learned when I took mine apart and put it back together. But yeah, no, that's cool. And I love, there was someone on the forum who said, is it just me, or was Chris trying to send a message when he said that he was buying aquariums with the money he won in his home game from his players, calling them fish, maybe? And I laughed. I'd never even put that together. I never even connected those dots. I don't know why, but I promised not to tap on any of the aquariums in my house. That's pretty funny.
Oh, man.
All right, we got
some great housekeeping here.
Yeah, I love how we call it housekeeping. Like, where's Ann B. Davis when you need her?
Yeah, we got some brooms and stuff here. All right, we mentioned the Running Aces Antioch Poker Tour event is continuing throughout this weekend, so get up there and freeze with me. But after that, Downstream Casino Resort will host its Four States Poker Championship Antioch Poker Tour event May 17th to 26th. Schedule's posted at antiochmagazine.com/downstream. And more details on all Antioch Poker Tour events, including the Antioch Poker Tour World Championship, can be found at antiochpokertour.com.
There's still time to book our May 20th Antioch Poker Cruise out of Miami. And, of course, you know we are sailing out of New York City and Tampa this year, too. Should be fun. Get all the details, including how you can win your way on board, at Dover Downs and Palm Beach Kennel Club at antiochcruises.com.
And speaking of Dover Downs Hotel and Casino in Delaware, it's running an Antioch Poker League every month. And you can win an Antioch Poker Cruise and a personalized Antioch League Champions jacket. Visit antiochmagazine.com/leagues for all the details and ask the manager of your favorite poker room to set up a league in their room.
Very cool. All right, let's see what's happening on our Ante Up news desk.
The Rational Group, owner of PokerStars, has completed its application for an interim gaming license in New Jersey, and Caesars Entertainment has applied in the same state to offer online gaming.
Yeah, no shock there. I don't know why it took them so long, to be honest, Caesars.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if they just opened the applications for it. I don't know how that really worked. I mean, obviously, you know, once the law is signed, there's some time involved.
Yeah.
Getting your ducks in a row and things like that, and really no one knows how soon it's going to be before they're actually supposed to be able to play games up there. I'm here in this fall, but as we learned with Nevada, they said this fall like 7 years in a row, still no one's playing online poker in Nevada right now. So, but finally getting moving up there, and you know, it's only going to be a handful of companies that can even apply for a license up there, because you have to have a brick and mortar casino in New Jersey in order to.
Yeah.
Be able to do it. So.
And Caesars has like four there, right? They have four.
Yeah. We're all there.
So they got the corner of it. Okay, so a proposed gaming compact between the Navajo Nation and the state of New Mexico would forbid any internet gaming in the state unless it is federally authorized. Let me ask you now, did I read further into that too, that they said not only will it have to be federally authorized, but also the Navajo Nation would have to be like running the internet portion of it or something?
I think it's an interesting little negotiation going on, if I'm understanding this correctly. I mean, it's kind of a calculated move on behalf of the Navajo Nation and saying, all right, let's put in this compact that no online gaming is legal unless it's federally authorized. And then if it is federally authorized, then we get to be the ones that do it. So essentially what they're trying to say is, we're willing to give up pushing into online gaming right now in exchange for having the monopoly on it when it does come.
Yeah.
Is what I think is going on.
Yeah. Is that right? I mean, is there going to be some sort of antitrust thing going on, or can you not do that in like one state?
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing in New Mexico right now. I mean, you have the only casinos in New Mexico are Indian casinos. So, if you do a law like New Jersey did, then they would be the only people allowed to do it anyhow.
Yeah.
So at that point, then it's, it doesn't really matter at that point. So, but it seems like, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but it seems like from reading the story that this is just a way for, because when you do these gaming compacts, there's always got to be a give and take,
Right.
You've got to make it palatable to the citizens of the state, and if you can say, hey, we were able to talk them out of online gaming. Yay, us! When really you didn't. You just delayed it.
Right.
Then everybody comes out and seems a little happy. But we'll see what happens as it gets... gaming compacts have always been very fascinating to me.
Yeah.
All right, and finally, the FBI has indicted 34 people, including poker pros A. Mozeri and Bill Edler, on illegal gambling charges when authorities say it was a multi-city operation of high-stakes poker games and sports betting that benefited the Russian mob.
Wow. Teddy KGB strikes again.
Yeah, this is a crazy story. All kinds of people got, there's a lot of other poker pros that got caught up in this. And then the woman that that organized the Tobey Maguire games, goes by Poker Princess. And sounds like a pretty pretty extensive investigation here. And our good friend Preet Bharara was behind this as well, of course.
Yeah, of course. It's probably a Ponzi scheme somewhere in there. it's weird because I chatted with Abe Mosseri at the World Series a couple years ago, and he's from Florida, so I'm assuming that might be the Miami one that they talked about, the Sting. And then Bill Edler, I played in that sit-and-go. I beat him in that sit-and-go at Sarasota.
Oh, yeah.
And he was the greatest guy ever, too. I just feel so bad that this has happened, And I don't know what to make of it. I really don't. I don't know what to make of it yet. I want to hear more about it before I really render any kind of opinion on it. But I just feel bad that two guys that I've talked to are part of this now. I feel bad.
Well, again, it's all the more reason to go play in licensed casinos.
Yeah.
And in almost all these cities, if not all of them, there are licensed casinos where you could go and have these high stakes games if you want to. That are licensed with cameras and security. And there's no reason really not to do it that way. You run the risk of this. Obviously, now sports betting is a completely different issue. But in terms of the poker games, it just seems like an unnecessary risk to take these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we have a brand new O'Malley's Move. This is his 41st episode. He's getting up there. He's been with us for a while now. So here we go, part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're sitting at a $1, $2, no-limit hold'em cash game. We've got 400 in front of us, and have had a pretty decent night. It's a full 10-handed table on a busy night at this card room. And the action has been coming in waves. It gets especially aggressive after someone takes a bad beat. The under-the-gun calls, and it's folded around to the hijack who makes it $10 to go. He just had to rebuy after someone sucked out on his flop straight, turning a flush. He sits with 200. We're in the cutoff with the jack of spades, jack of hearts. Great. Can't win with them, can't beat them. We'd like to discourage anyone else from entering this hand, and we'd like to buy the button. We make it $25 to go, everyone else folds, including the under-the-gun limper, and the hijack thinks for quite a while before putting in a call, almost like he wanted to raise. There's roughly $50 in the pot, and the flop comes the king of spades, king of hearts, ten of hearts. Our opponent bets $30, leaving him only about $150 behind. What could he have here? We make the call to see what he's going to do on the turn. And with $110 in the pot and the seven of clubs falling, he surprises us by checking. We put $60 in, and he thinks for a long time, once again, before calling. There's now $230 in the pot, and the three of hearts comes on the river. Our opponent once again takes a sweet time before checking. What does this check mean? Is it a missed ace-queen? Queen-jack? The flush got there. Maybe it's ace-ten or nines. Could he also have jacks? So, are we happy with the size of the pot, or are we betting for value?
Okay, so in our home game this week, we had a new player. One of our regular players brought him. And we got there and we found out he only played no limit hold'em.
Yeah, that was kind of shocking.
Yeah, it was a little tough, I think. But obviously, we try to teach him the games when we won. But, you know, it's always tough. You know, you don't really teach somebody a game and then immediately take his money.
Yeah, right.
You'd rather him have some concept and then take his money. But, you know, as we were going through that, I was thinking about it. And then a couple weeks ago, too, I was on Fifth Street Radio, and I was asked that always unanswerable question, you know, how do you decide who the best poker player in the world is? And so I kind of put these two thoughts together this week and thought it might be an interesting show for us to rank the eight games in the eight-game mix rotation in regards to which are the most important to master to be considered a great poker player.
That's a pretty good idea.
Yeah, we talked about maybe doing a top 10 list, right? But then, you know, hey, you know, this eight-game mix is kind of taking off, and so that's a good starting point. Gives a little form for the discussion, right? Mm. And then I think at the end of our little list, we can add in a couple, round it out to a true top 10 with some games that aren't in there. But as I was putting this together, it turned out to be a lot more difficult than I thought it was going to be. I don't know about you.
No, I have to agree. It's weird. When I started, I'm like, well, clearly this will be number one, and clearly this will be number. And then I'm like, wait a minute, you got to really remember the focus of this idea, and that is
right.
What you know, the most important game to making you the best player, to making you the most well-rounded player, or whatever. What tools will you learn the most from each game, and then rank them as important? And what? So it took me a little while. At first, I was like, oh, it's gonna be easy, and then it took a while. So now, I think I've given it enough careful thought that there's rhyme to my reason.
Yeah, what's funny is, you know, I was thinking about this on one of my morning walks, and I had them ranked, and when I actually sat down to write it up for the show, only one of the eight are in the same spot as they were when I first thought about it. So, yeah. I mean, because when you sit down and start thinking, like, wait a minute, that's, I gotta do this. So, and certainly a wide variety of opinions on this, too, and you and I kept our list separate, so we're gonna kind of surprise each other,
yeah.
Or not surprise each other, depending on what the case is. But definitely want to hear, get some, feedback going from our listeners, you know, both on the forum or Facebook or an email on what they think after this list, because I'm pretty sure it's going to be kind of controversial. Not controversial in the got pinch for a hooker controversy, but just controversy because it's open. There's so much rich debate possible on this.
Yeah, yeah, and it just it's weird. I really didn't think some of the ones that landed where they did on my list. When I first started them, I thought, there's no way that's like way at the end. And then I started thinking about, wait a minute, you have to know that before you know this. So
yeah.
So I really couldn't believe the way it ended up. But I think it's pretty sound on my part. And I'm interested to see what you have to say. And like I said, we each have our own list. So we may be repeating the same stuff to each other. And that is not going to make for great podcasting, but that's the beauty of podcasting. So you want to start or you want me to start?
Up to you.
Okay, I'll go first.
I'm pretty sure I know what your number one is.
Oh, yeah?
I think so.
All right. Well, my number one, it was very easy for me. It's straight stud.
Wow, I was wrong.
Yep. Just regular stud. There's so much to it. Let's look at it this way. First, you have two down cards, which in a way resembles Hold'em. So that already, you have two down cards, dealing with two down cards. So that will sort of prepare you for Hold'em. And then you have to keep track of the up cards to get an idea of not only how your opponents are going with their hands, but how it affects your potential hand. Also, position changes on every street, so you can never really take a moment off. You know, you could be playing other games and just kind of like veg out for a second.
Right.
But in this game, once the position changes, now you got to think to yourself, what can I do here to get more money in or to keep the pot small, because that person's going to go first now. Should I check with the option of thinking that the person behind me is going to raise? So there's so much thinking, so much to keep track of, so much to have you stay sharp that you really just... And plus, on top of it, there's another round of betting in this than any other game. Stud has the most betting rounds. So I think that if you can conquer Stud, you can conquer so many other games because of it. So I really think regular stud is the number one game to make you the most well-rounded player.
Wow. Excellent. Well, very good. I don't think we're normally going to go out of order, but I got to say, just because it's so interesting in the conversation right now, stud ended up number 8 on my list.
Wow. Wow.
And what I wrote about is, I love stud. I think it's a great game. It totally is. All the points that you just made are right on. But what I said is, if you know how to play stud 8, then stud high is a breeze. So you'll see as I get down my list that stud 8 is a little higher than stud.
Okay.
All right. But yeah, that's why I put it all the way at 8. And trust me, when I went into this list, that was not what I thought was going to be 8. But as I worked through it, and I'm like, yeah, okay, guess it has to be.
Okay.
Wow. All right, well, my number one, and I'm not really happy about this, but I think it's just the reality of the world. I put No Limit Hold'em, number one.
Wow.
And I said, for no other reason, it's the most popular game and the one with the biggest fields. If you're not able to play this game at a high level, it's going to be very hard to be a successful poker player. And, again, we can get into, and this is a good part of the discussion here, is what do we mean by a successful poker player? And obviously they are Omaha specialists and... stud specialists that are very successful, live in nice places, and don't worry about when their next meal is going to be. But in terms of being, considered the best poker player in the world, I think you have to have some nice runs and some No Limit Hold'em tournaments, just because that's where the money is.
Wow. Oh, wow.
A little shocking, right?
Well, not only that, but I'm wondering, to me, I was thinking of, because we mentioned 8-game mix,
right,
and then we talked about what are the games that you'd have to master to be considered a great poker player. And when I talk to the real pros out there, the ones who grind it into cash games and play tournaments and do it all, they're the ones that always say, that guy's a tournament player. He's not a poker player. And
right,
you could be a successful tournament player in No Limit Hold'em and never, ever, ever play any of the other games or be even considered a great poker player. You just learned how to play tournaments and how to shove your big stack, and there's a lot of skill that's taken away from you. So I never would have thought of it that way.
I absolutely agree with you. And I don't think the actual skill involved in No Limit rank justifies it being this high.
Yeah.
It's just the notoriety you get from being a good No Limit Hold'em player. But that being said, I didn't mention this. I mean, it's the only game on this list that is No Limit.
Right.
And I think there's something about that. Again, I mean, there's a reason that I think I'm a pretty good limit player and a pretty crappy no limit player, and I just haven't adjusted to what you need to do to be a no limit player. It's a totally different skill set, and I just haven't mastered it yet. And the people that have, I have a lot of respect for, because I can't figure it out.
Hmm. Okay, well, number two on my list is No Limit Hold'em. But this is why. It's such a simple game, but the unlimited betting and the heart metal that you have to have are really second to none. And to me, what this game teaches me to make me a great player, and I'm not a great player, but what it could teach a person to make it a great player, is, one, it forces you to really learn hand ranges, unlike any other game.
Right.
And it, to me, it's the only game that gets your heart racing. Maybe PLO gets my heart racing, but the other games, none of them get my heart racing, ever.
That's true.
Ever. I like, no matter what the stakes are, I'm still only one more bet and whatever. I might get ticked off and might fall asleep or whatever, but I'm never, my heart's never going, and my carotid arteries, you know, pumping away. None of that stuff's going. So it teaches you to deal with stress. It teaches you to deal with big, big swings and situations. And so, and of course, the hand ranges. You know, yeah, there are hand ranges in the stud games and stuff, and even the Omaha and stuff. But really, at that point, those games play out. Whereas in this, it's like, all right, I can lose my whole stack. I got to narrow down what this guy is playing right now. He has to have this, this, or this, and I can only beat this. I'm out. You know, that kind of thing. So that was why I put No Limit Hold'em so high. Not because of the popularity factor, although that is the other good reason that if you're going to be considered really good, you need to be able to make a lot of money really quickly, and you can do that in No Limit Hold'em because it's prevalent. You know, it's ubiquitous. So, yeah. No Limit Hold'em, number two, for a little different reasons than yours.
Excellent. All right, my number two was Stud8.
Nice.
And my justification for it was that it's really a combination of three of the eight games, and no other game on this list is a combination of three of the eight. So that's a pretty big high percentage of what we're using here as our baseline. you have to have the ability to understand Stud's differences, one that it's played limit. There's the extra round of betting, as you mentioned, that position possibly changing every street, as you mentioned. And then after you master that, then you have to figure out how to go just for the high, how to go just for the low, and in this game, more importantly, how to go for the scoop. And I think your brain is just taken in so many different directions with Stud8. It really is one of the greatest poker games ever. I know you agree with me on that.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, you know, if you got to learn to play Stud and Raz before you can play Stud8. But if you're really good at Stud8, then Raz and Stud really are nothing games at that point in terms of...
Wait, you lost you. In terms of what?
In terms of having to adjust to
them. Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know if you cut out there or what, but yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, number three for me, this is the shocker. Limit Hold'em.
Wow, it is pretty shocking.
Yeah, now here's why to me. This game really teaches me, or it has taught me in the past, the science of poker.
Right.
The odds, you know, the outs, the come betting, the free cards. It's so technical to me, whereas No Limit Hold'em is a feel. It's a person. And I know that Limit Hold'em can be that way, but it really taught me, you know, that you don't have to bully somebody to win a pot. You don't have to, you know, just blindly shove to win the pot. You have to be creative, and you have to figure out ways to save money and to extract money. And not that that's not part of the other games. It's just that whole Limit Hold'em taught it to me the most, I think. And it's shocking that it's – when I did this list, I thought, oh, Limit Hold'em's going to be last. And it's not. It's number three. So it was. I think this is really an important thing for people to do, to really rank these games in your mind, to teach you what kind of poker player you are and what taught you what you are, and then maybe even use that later on when you're struggling with those situations in the game you like to play. So this is kind of a cool list. I like this.
Interesting. All right. Number three on my list is Pot Limit Omaha.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's a very popular game as well, too. Probably second No Limit Hold'em on this. It's the only one on this list that uses the pot limit betting structure, which I think is arguably the hardest structure to master. I mean, no limit, you know, you can go all in, you know, you can just, oh, I'm all in. Limit, you're forced to raise what you're supposed to. Pot limit, I think there's a little more of combination between the two. and it makes it a little more difficult because, you know, you do that extremes where you just bet the pot all the time, which is wrong, or sometimes you bet enough when you should be betting more. So I think the whole pot limit is really difficult. And then you also have to have a ton of gamble in you to be successful in this game, which you don't really necessarily need in most of these other games. I mean, these limit games, you don't need a lot of gamble. I mean, it certainly helps if you have it. Certainly no limit hold'em you have to, but in PLO, you really do. I think we've illustrated that on the show, you know, with some of our Hands of the Week or, you know, O'Malley's moves, where, you know, you get a little cautious with these big wraps and things like that, and you can't. You just gotta get it in there and know the odds are in your favor. So if you can master that gamble part, which you don't really need to do anything else, I think you're gonna be a really good player.
I agree, and it's weird because this is kind of where our list falls apart. Now, because four is my PLO, so we're gonna talk about PLO back to back. To me, this game is sort of an amalgam of hold'em. In that, if no limit hold'em were the daddy, and limit hold'em were the mommy, PLO would be the paternal twin offspring of these two games. And to me, it teaches you the value of the pot and the nuts and position. I think PLO, I think a lot of people who just learn this game or don't know it, don't really understand the value of position in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. And they really need to. And for someone to become a great poker player, you need to know. It helps you keep track of the pot, so you know how much is in there at all times, so you can do the proper pot bet sizing and things. So there are a lot of really important lessons learned in PLO. So that's why it's my fourth. So right next to you. So
very nice.
Yeah.
All right, my fourth is limit deuce to seven triple draw.
Okay.
This game obviously is the less widely played of all eight of them, but it's the only game on the list where no cards are exposed at all, meaning you have to be talented in picking up on betting patterns and live tells to have any shot at being successful, and that's a lot harder than I think it sounds. It's also important to understand how to draw, as this is the only game on the list besides Raz where your hand can get worse on each street. And with Raz, of course, you're forced to get more cards. Here you have the options, as we, you know, discussed earlier in the show with the snowing possibility. It really is the most alien game on this list to people, I think. I think these other games, I mean, you can put somebody in them and kind of give them a quick lesson and, okay, you know, a lot of stuff makes sense. Triple draw, I mean, that's a game you just have to play a lot before it actually really truly makes sense to you.
Yeah. All right, well, number five is Stud 8.
Really shocked this is five on your list.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I said, well, this is my favorite game. To me, it is merely a variation of Stud, so the value of the game, in my mind, has to be seen in a decision-making. Which way your opponents you think are going, which way you should bet, and to me, it's the perfect introduction to split-pot games. I always feel like you need to learn the other stuff first. Learn the game, learn the other games, the root games, and then get into splitting stuff. To me, I understand what you said earlier about Stud 8 and that you have to, if you learn that, you're good at Stud. But I feel like Stud 8 offers you an easy way out, and
that's true.
Stud doesn't. So,
very good point.
So that's why I lowered it. It was going to be my number one. As soon as you said, I'm thinking about a top 10 of ranking this up, and I'm like, study. But it's just my favorite game, and I had to think about it objectively, and I really thought to myself, if I know Stud, I can learn Stud 8 easily. But if I learn Stud 8 and I use the I'm only going to go low tactical way of playing or something, you're not going to really become a really good Stud player. But it's so much easier to be a good Stud player first and then say, oh, all I got to do is split the pot with these people now too and go low on top of it, and I have ways to. So to me, I felt like Stud was more important than Stud 8, so that's why it came after all the other games the root games that I listed first. So, but but it is my favorite game. I don't want anybody to second guess that. It's my favorite game.
Well, yeah, this definitely is not a list of our favorite in order.
Right.
Certainly, it would be vastly different if we did it that way.
Absolutely.
All right, my fifth was Limit Omaha 8.
Okay.
And this is kind of where the list kind of fell apart for me. Because this game is here really, in my opinion, because I think it's more textured than the remaining three on the list. So it's the best of what's left, I guess.
Okay.
Because if you've mastered PLO, you have a good handle on Limit Omaha. Obviously, it's a different structure, but you understand the hands. And if you've mastered Stud 8, then you have a good handle on Split Pot Game. So, you know, again, if you're going down this list and, you know, you master the first one and then move on to the second one, really, at this point, the rest of these games on this list are just variations. So, like I said, this one here, just because it's a little more complicated to learn than the other three. But once you've mastered the other ones that I've had at the top of my list, then the rest of them are pretty easy, I think.
Yeah.
Or easier.
Same kind of problem I think you're going to run into, because same with me. So that's why number six is my triple draw, because it was the last game that wasn't a variation of the other ones that I had. Position and bluffing lessons are what's so important.
Yes.
So it teaches you to master those two things, and especially position and bluffing too. I mean, if you play it in a no-limit version, you know, where it's single draw, the same game, whatever, then it really comes out. But in a triple draw, which is what we're supposed to be ranking these, so I just feel like position is like the most important in this game than all other games. Maybe no limit hold'em, but it's really important. So, and plus, it's more the low ball mindset too. You know, you go from I went from stud A, where I learned low ball, to now triple draw, a different low ball type of game. So that was sort of the natural progression for me.
Very good, very good. And you know what's interesting about this, I would never advocate taking, let's say we have somebody that's never played poker in the world, in their life. I would never advocate starting with no limit draw, deuce of seven draw,
right,
and as a game. But if you think about it, if you could take that person, teach them that game, and they become really good at it, they would be a phenomenal no limit hold'em player, I think.
Yeah, yeah, because of the bluffing.
It really is just a game of wills,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know? Can you tell the story, and can you stand your ground?
Yep.
And those are two things that are vital in No Limit Hold'em. And you have to do them. You don't have to do them in No Limit Hold'em. You can be a decent No Limit Hold'em player without doing that. But in No Limit Deuce of Seven, you have to, or you're going to be just totally waxed.
Yeah.
And of course, the limit game is a completely different game. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that whole having nerves of steel is important.
Yeah.
All right, six. This is one of them that I had as eight for a while, and then it just kind of crept up. Raz! And, you know, I know it's the national game of the Antioch Nation, but let's be honest. There's far less skill in this game than the rest on this list. If I had to take a no-limit hold'em specialist, and I had just 5 minutes to teach he or she one of these other seven games, this would be the one I'd pick.
Okay.
But I put it ahead of the other two because going for the worst hand really, honestly, is harder than it sounds.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a backhanded compliment to Raz here. On one hand, I'm saying there's really not a lot to it, and on the other side, but there is enough to it that you can't go in there without actually knowing what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because, again, this happened. Seven is my Raz. And why I put it on this list is because if you're going to be a great player, you need to be able to deal with frustration. And that's what this game teaches you.
Yeah,
it's
very good.
How to deal with frustration. It's the only game where you can also positively know you have the best hand on Fitz Street. You can't do that. It's very difficult to do that in stud. You'd have to have a monster hand like a royal or quads to absolutely know you have the best hand on Fitz Street in stud and stud 8. But and even stud 8 you couldn't. So for me, at Raz, you know somebody's got a 10 show, and you have 5 cards 9 or lower, you're in the lead. You're winning at that point.
You're winning!
You know, I mean, you know, statistically, you may not be ahead, but actually, you're ahead. And so, it's a fun game that way. You know, you can load them up and then just hope for the bricks, but really, it's the frustration part of it. That and Deuce of 7 is frustration, too. But if you're going to be a great poker player, and you're going to be considered the greatest player in the world, you have to learn to deal with frustration professionally. And,
absolutely.
And that's one of them.
Couldn't agree more. All right, seven on my list was Limit Hold'em. And, of course, our listeners know I actually love Limit Hold'em. I definitely think it's vastly underappreciated by players. I think a lot of players that play Limit Hold'em right now would be far more successful playing Limit if they had it available to them and they were willing to do it rather than No Limit. But in terms of this list, You can gear down from No Limit Hold'em and still be decent in this game with no additional training. Yeah. So that's why it ended up being kind of pretty far down on my list. But when I started, I actually thought it was going to be 8. Then I thought more about the stud and flipped them. But
wow. This is so shocking to me that Limit Hold'em is so far down on your list. It really is. And then the fact that stud is last, I just couldn't believe you put stud last, but it's because of the stud 8 thing, so that's understandable.
And they're two really great games, you know? I mean, I really, in general, I they really are amazing. I think you need to know how to play them. It's just, you know, some of these other ones are asking you to learn more, so, you know.
All right. Well, as it is, can't be anyone's surprise, I figured, why not make number 8 Omaha 8? I personally think this is the devil's game, but I have to say something nice about it, so I'll say it teaches you about the nuts and the value of not being quartered, which really doesn't happen in any other game, to be honest. It's very difficult.
Yeah, it's almost the reason to have it a little bit higher, not that I'm trying to defend where I put it, but I forgot that part. But I mean, it's even in PLO, you know, I mean, you're, the nuts is on your mind.
Yeah.
But in Limit Omaha 8, the nuts has to be on your line. Just has to be, or you're just going to get crushed.
Yeah.
And there really is no other game like that where you have to think about the nuts. I mean, maybe Deuce to 7, but even Deuce to 7, it's so hard to get a 7 perfect.
Yeah, no.
Even with 3 draws. So even at that point, you get excited with an 8 or, you know, a 9 sometimes.
The thing about Omaha 8 to me, as far as, like I said, I kept coming back to that whole great poker player thing.
Right.
For Omaha 8 to me, it kept coming back to how many people see Ace, Deuce, Trey just go with it and don't even think about their hand ever again. And they don't learn anything from it. They're just like, oh, there's my low, I'm getting half the pot. And they don't even really consider poker or, you know, or the thought process. It's just, Ace, Deuce in my hand, going to play for a race. Ace, Deuce in my hand, going to win half. Yeah. You know, whatever. And it's like this easy way out. It's sort of this, there's no thinking involved for a lot of people who play this game. Not that that's the way you would play it if you're going to be a great player. I'm just saying, to me, I felt like I learned all my lessons already before I got to Omaha 8. All that did was teach me to look at Ace Deuce and say, okay, I can go with this hand, and that, and then I play the other games in my mind. So Omaha 8 was definitely last on the 8-game mix list for me.
And, of course, I already mentioned stud was there and the reason why. But like we said at the top of the show, we wanted to make it a kind of a top 10, so kind of freestyling on the last two here with what games we would add to this list.
Yeah.
And I think the first one I put on here is Crazy Pineapple.
Oh, jeez. Because that's what I have on my list, too.
Oh, I figured, yeah. I mean, really, I mean, when you come down to it, I mean, and we're probably going to say the same thing, it's really not a lot of difference between it and Limit Hold'em or No Limit Hold'em, depending on which way you're playing it. But it does force you to make those tough decisions on the flop.
Exactly.
As we mentioned in the, what was it, O'Malley's Move last week or Hand of the Week, one of those two. You know, sometimes you're in these really unwinnable, gut-wrenching decisions. And again, thinking about that kind of stuff ends up helping you in other games. And that's why I put it on the list.
Yeah, no, I did have Crazy Pineapple too, and it's exactly what I put for the tough decision-making. And that's you know, that's sort of a tool that you'll carry through other games, but nowhere is it stronger than Crazy Pineapple, really, especially when you have something like, you know, King, Ace, King, and the Ace and the King are suited, and then, you know, comes on low cards, but two are hearts, and you got somebody shoving on you. Well, what do? Do you think your aces are good, or do you go for the nut flush, or your kings are good, or whatever? So there are some tough decisions to make, and you almost invariably always regret it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
about that point that you're making too, and I don't think people realize this too. That's the hidden skill in this game that you don't necessarily get in these other games, I don't think, or certainly don't get as much as this, is remembering that you are trying to win the pot, not get the best hand.
Right.
And that in Pineapple, you were forced sometimes to break a better hand because it's going to give you a better shot of winning the pot.
Right.
You know, and to some degree that happens in Omaha. You know, you improve on the river and you really didn't want to improve because now you're probably vulnerable. But definitely Pineapple, you have to make that choice. You know, again, in Omaha, it just happens to you. But Pineapple, understanding that, you know, oh, hey, I've got a set right now. Well, the set might not hold up. I might need to flush to win, and being, you know, confident in your decision making and your mathematical skills to make that choice That's something a little bit different.
It is a torturous game. Let's just put it that way. There will be times where you throw the card away, and that card comes on the turn and would have made you two pair, or would have made you your flush when you were thinking, I got a made hand and it's good enough, or whatever. And there will be times where you have the made hand and you throw the made hand away and to make the flush, and you'll make it, or you'll, or straight, or whatever it is, and you'll get paid off. I always let the action dictate what I'm going to do, as far as if it's really heavy action and I'm going to need a huge hand to win it, I might gamble and do it. But the decision making, that's why I put it in there too. That's really weird. So what's your last one?
You're going to love this one. Open face Chinese poker.
That's not a poker game. You can't play that.
A poker game.
Oh man.
Well, you know, really, I gotta say, trying to find these last two games was a little difficult. You know, I think the folks that came up with the 8-game mix, I think, really did a good job of picking 8 good games. You know, maybe some of these ones that have some overlap, you can replace with something else, but. But I really wanted something different on this list, and really, Open Face Chinese was my 9, I would say. The Crazy Pineapple was the next one I came up with. You know, I was also thinking maybe like a Badoogie, but, you know, or a good old 5-card draw or 5-card stud or something like that, but, you know, none of that stuff really, I think, helped too much. Open Face is just completely different than anything else on here. So I think one of the two Chinese games has to be on here. And I'm open to an argument for it being good old missionary position Chinese poker that you prefer to play. But I really do think the Open Face has a lot more gamble in it, as we talked about at the top of the show. And we don't really need to rehash that. But figuring out that kind of stuff. And then also, I mean, really... You know, scanning the board. You know, one of the weaknesses, the one app that I play with, it's really a heads up game. But the game is so much better forehanded the way it's intended, because then you're trying to follow what everybody's doing and making better decisions. And more cards are out, so you can probably make better decisions. In that sense, it's probably a little easier forehanded than it is heads up. But it is a drastically different game than anything else on this list.
Man. Well, my last one is Follow the Queen. No, I'm kidding. I really felt like 5-card draw needed to be on this list. And here's why. I think our generation, now, when I say our generation, I mean people who were already past 21 when Chris Moneymaker won his thing. You know what I mean? I think we all learned poker playing 5-card draw. And I think that's how you're introduced to the game. That's how you learn the rules of the game. That's how you figure out what beats what. A lot of people learn that way. And for me, there are a lot of tells in 5-card draw. I think that's the best game for tells. Yeah, I know Nolan Hold'em, you could be looking at the ceiling or shaking your foot or whatever, and all that stuff, the really cool stuff that Joe gets into and stuff. But really, the way people arrange their cards, the way they bet, the way they pull them, what they're pulling, it's just... There are a lot of tells in regular 5-card draw, and there's a lot of bluffing in it, too. The way you bluff, keeping a third card, make you think you have 3 of a kind when you only have a pair with an ace kicker, something like that. You know, I mean, there is a lot of bluffing and tells to be told, and I realize that those come with triple draw itself, too.
Mm-hmm.
But just the fact that 5-card draw really is like the George Washington of poker, in my mind. That it needs some reverence. It needs to be on this list somehow, and that's why I put it on there.
Interesting. Very good point.
Yeah, I don't know what the other game would have been had I just said, all right, it's too similar to triple draw. Let's find another game. But it might have been.
Yeah, that's what's tough, right? I mean, you know, I'm like, hey, Chris, let's just add 2 more, and it wasn't that easy.
Exactly.
To really do.
Exactly. But Crazy Pineapple,
if you can master those 8, you're going to be a great poker player if you can master the 8 that we already talked about.
I knew you and I were going to have Crazy Pineapple as a 9th, though. I knew that was going to happen. Or, yeah, whatever, but it's pretty funny.
Well, hey, I had a lot of fun with this, and again, hopefully our listeners will get in on it and let us know how they would rank them or where we fell down in our analysis of it. And, you know, let's get something going on the forum or on Facebook page. Certainly you can email us as well, too, but it's more fun to have that organic conversation going on. So we'll see you over at antiupmagazine.com/forum.
Yes.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
I always love when we get hands from Bernice Q.
Yeah.
Up in New York. And, of course, you know, there's no more online poker anymore, so she's actually going by some of her her given name, Amy, now, until it comes back, which I think is a great sacrifice for the rest of the novel, you know. But no, I mean, the reason I like her hands is she doesn't send us a bunch, but when she sends it, it's because there's a reason, and it's a pretty layered one. And so we'll see whether you share my same love for this hand.
Okay.
Here's the word. All right, so she wrote, she was like, I honestly don't know if I played this right or completely wrong. My first instinct is to tell myself it was a just-go-broke hand, and maybe it's just what we tell ourselves to feel better about playing badly. In fact, I think we always do that. All right, this is coming from an underground room in New York City, 1-3 no-limit hold'em cash game, 9 players with stacks from $100 up to $800, some very active players, two tight passive players, a few solid players I know, but mostly new people to me. I have a tight, solid image. I haven't shown a bluff, and when I win a pot without showing my cards, people guess out loud what I had, and they always give me too much credit. That's always a good feeling, isn't it?
Yeah.
I have about 400, and she says no one cares what I built that up from, and I'm on the button. One more reason out there. So fun.
before we move forward, have we reached out to Amy to see if she's part of that sting?
No. I hope not.
I'm hoping she's all right. Hoping
just because she lives there? Come on.
Well, I know, but underground game in New York? You never know.
Yeah, there's lots of underground games.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. so she's on the button. Everybody limps to her, and she has Jack of Clubs, 8 of Diamonds. And before you answer what you would do, she said, this has not happened all night, the fact that everyone limped to the button.
All right, so she's on the button.
She's on the button. There's been absolutely no action right now.
Okay. Well, you know, when you're playing No Limit Hold'em, a lot of times you're playing the people in position. So I don't really care about her cards, to be honest with you. If she's just looking to make a move because they've always given her too much credit and she'd like to be able to raise, get a caller, then c-bet and take down a decent little pot, then I don't really care what her cards are. But if you're just playing ABC poker, I'm folding this hand. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But she's in position. She's playing cash. And she's got a reputation for playing only really good hands, apparently. If I'm going to play this hand, I'm not going to limp. I'm taking control of this hand while I have control as well with position. So I'm going to raise this hand. Like I said, the cards aren't going to matter now. If I'm going to play this hand, I'm going to raise it, and I'm going to watch the people on the flop. I'm going to see if they call. If they re-raise me, then if I think I can push them around, I might call or re-raise again. Or I'll just get out of the way. So, but my initial is not to just call here. I'm definitely going to raise his hand.
Yeah. What I think is really fascinating, the first part of this hand is, you know, in general, there's no reason to gamble so much in a cash game. You know, this is a tournament. I'm raising this every time and 40 times on Sunday because I need to pick up those blinds to keep alive. Obviously, I don't want. If I'm going to raise here, it's not to pick up the blinds. I'm not going to risk $10 here to pick up $4. You know,
right.
And that always, I think, is something I don't think people really realize when they shift gears from tournament to cash game. Oh, I need to pick up the blinds. Well, you don't need to pick up the blinds here. You know, you just don't. And now you're risking too much to get too little. You know, in a tournament, those chips have value beyond what's the number printed on them. Here. Those ships are worth 1 and 3.
You know? Well, wait a minute. I may have missed something when I was writing down the details that you were giving me. I thought there were limpers. There were no limpers?
No. She's first in.
Okay. I'm sorry. I, for some reason, I thought you said limpers were in this.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm wrong. Everyone limps.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I thought no one limped. Okay.
All right. There
I'm
you
sorry.
Go. So if she has a ton of limpers, I'm definitely raising here if I'm going to play this hand.
That changes everything. I'm
yeah.
sorry.
Yeah. Okay, fault. Good. Okay. I thought I was going crazy for a minute there.
Oh, shoot. I had a really good point. That was all ruined.
Well, that is a good point. If it ever folds to you in a cash game and you're on the button, all you're going to do is pick up the blinds and let it go. But in this good situation, when you have a bunch of limpers and you can isolate and try to take down already some dead money already, I'm gonna raise every day.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. All right. So that's a good discussion at this point then, because I think you're right. You need to raise. There's a lot of dead money in there. But if you're going to raise, I think you need to understand what you're trying to do with the raise here. I mean, you're trying to hopefully take it down here with all the dead money, right?
Right.
And then if the flop comes, you're going to want to commit to keeping that ruse up until you get brush back, which I think is what you said.
Right.
So I don't want to get too crazy with this hand, because the problem now with raising is now I'm playing a really big pot with a crappy hand, though in the best position. Yeah. So I just want to be careful on that. Not timid, but careful.
Right, because I'm not really concerned with my hand at this point. I'm concerned with just making a pot, taking it down, and if I can't take it down, then I have to reassess. So I'm really not really concerned with my cards at this point until I get some of that rushback you mentioned.
Right. I'm just playing devil's advocate. I'm trying to think of an excuse to fold here.
Well, you could fold because you just, you know, you're thinking that it's just crazy to get involved with this hand. If you don't feel confident enough, there's a reason to fold. But I think she's got a lot going for her here where they think she's only playing good hands and she's in position. Yeah. And there's dead money. There's a lot of positives. You know, try to weigh the thing. So to me, to fold, it's not a horrific play. If you want to fold, you got Jack 8 and you don't know what's going to happen behind you. Maybe something will happen with the blinds. If you raise, they re-raise. You know, and then all of a sudden now you're stuck with Jack 8, knowing this guy's going to lead out at you no matter what anyway, and you have to hit your hand or believe he missed his to really be aggressive with him. So I can see folding, but if you're in position and you feel like you've got all these other things going for you, I would definitely not fold.
Yeah, I think I would have a harder time advocating folding than I would calling here. And here's the reason I could advocate calling. I'm not saying that's what I would do, but I could advocate. I mean, this is not a terrible hand. I mean, it's not a good hand. It's not a terrible hand. A terrible hand in this situation just to call would be like Jack 4. Mm-hmm. You know, at least we have a straight possibility here. Mm-hmm. And the cards are a little bit higher than that. So I could see putting in $3 here and hope I get a great flop. But the problem with that at that point then is you got so many other people in this hand that the chances of everybody else flopping something pretty good are much higher.
Yeah, you've not narrowed the field, narrowed the range.
Exactly.
You're going to go broke in an unraised pot, possibly. So, and, you know, Dan Negreanu has been known to say, Jack 8's a juicy hand. So, let's, you know, I think that if I'm going to play it, though, I'm raising. I don't think I'm going to call. It's too many tangibles could go wrong if I let the entire table come in for a flop and I have Jack 8 and then get flop some sort of precarious thing where, you know, it's Jack High.
Well, let me ask you this, and I don't know the answer to this. I'm just trying to think right now, because it doesn't happen very often when everybody limps the button. You know, sometimes it's, okay, well, if everybody else is limping, I'll limp too, and with a bunch of crappy hands, you know, hoping to hit big. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, with that many people, I got to think somebody's got something, right? Maybe it's not the under the gun, maybe it's not the under gun plus one, maybe it's the under gun plus two, but somebody's probably got something and are hoping that they're seeing how this hand is developing and they think someone's going to get frisky and raised with nothing, which is what we're contemplating doing. So if we get re-raised here, what do you do? Pre-flop. You
know, well, I let it go. I mean, okay. I just do
so
it.
So I guess that's the question then. Is it worth putting in, I mean, what are you going to put in for a raise here? 20 probably?
Yeah, probably 15 to 20.
Yeah, is it worth that risk if somebody raises you knowing that you, I mean, that's a $20, I mean, I guess that's what you got to factor, and again, I'm not saying it's wrong or not, but is it worth the $20 to put in to get a nice pre-flop pot here versus knowing if someone raises you, you've just cost yourself $20 for nothing?
Well, I'm going by what I've been told, and what I've been told is that this isn't a very aggressive table. Clearly, by the limping, it's not aggressive. I would think that if it was an aggressive table, you might get somebody trying to trap limping. But they know that she's behind them, she's in position, and she plays only good cards. So if I'm at a table where everyone limps, and let's just move it from where she is now to middle position, and she gets pocket jacks or pocket queens. Mm-hmm. Is she going to limp? Are you going to limp? No one's limping with those good enough hands. So I really don't, especially when there's limpers ahead of you. You are not going to want to just slow play jacks with limpers ahead of you, or queens, or kings, or ace king.
No.
And if you do, that's why you're not a good 11 hold'em player. I mean, I'm serious. This isn't set mining now. You need to narrow this field. If you have three limpers ahead of you, four people behind you, and you have queens, you're not setting up some trap for a passive table. You need to raise here, and they all think would think that would do that. They wouldn't limp with queens or kings or anything that's really formidable that could re-raise us on the button. I really don't. So, in my mind, yes, it is worth making it $20 or $15 to go. And if somebody re-raises me, they don't believe me, well, then I don't have the reputation that I just projected in this email that said, you know, they thought they've overguesstimated on what I had for the winning hands when I didn't show my cards. So clearly these people think she's playing really good hands. So if she makes a raise, they need to believe that. And if they don't believe that, then I don't think it's because they have a great hand. I think they just don't believe it. And I don't think they're going to re-raise her. So we're playing no limit hold'em cash games here. It's pretty common to raise on the button. But when you have a table full of limpers, it's not common to just limp hoping to trap somebody in a cash game. That's in a tournament when you know you got somebody crazy on your left. This is a cash game that's pretty routine. So I wouldn't even bat an eye at making a raise here.
Okay, interesting. All right, well, our hero does decide to limp as well.
Okay.
And she says, I simply can't justify folding here. It's 8-1 pot odds. Assuming the blinds call and check, and I'm in position. I can't justify raising because with 8 people in, I'd have to raise quite a bit to take the pot right here. And if I get even one call, the pot will be so big, I'll have to commit too many chips to continuation bet on this mediocre hand. What do you think about that?
Well, I disagree. I disagree pretty much with all of it. I understand the pot odds are there, but I don't think that's a reason to call. It doesn't matter if you had deuce 7 offsuit. You're not calling with 8-1 to hope it hits 7. You know, I mean, okay, so you hit your 8 on this flop. What does that mean to you now? Okay, yeah, I had the right odds to hit a pair. Well, what good is that? What are 8s going to do for you here? You know, okay, so flop 2 pair. What are the odds of flopping 2 pair? Weigh that percentage against the amount of money you just put in to win 8 bets. I don't know if they're equal. So to me, when we talk about no limit hold'em, every quality player of No Limit Hold'em tells you it's about people and it's about position. Well, playing Jack 8 as a limp, now you've given up half that. You're not playing the people anymore. You're just limping along hoping to hit your hand. Now you're playing your cards rather than the people and the position. So I disagree. I think this hand, the worst thing to do is call with this hand. I would rather fold and not get involved or raise and take control. So to me, I would disagree with both those things, to be honest.
Okay. Well, as you said, she calls. The small blind completes and the big blind checks. So everybody is
wow.
In this hand.
Family pot.
Pot is $27 minus about $3 rake. Nine people to flop.
Jeez.
Which is the ace of hearts, jack of hearts, 8 of clubs, and of course we flop bottom 2 pair.
Wow. Well, here's the problem. And I'm getting ahead of myself because I don't know what all the other players do since we're last to act. Well, the problem now is that you've flopped bottom 2 pair and can get counterfeited so easily or out 2 paired so easily. And your hand still may not even be good. You know, who knows? Somebody could add ace-8. Somebody can easily limp with a suited ace-8. So this is a really... I know that's what you're hoping for when you're playing like limit hold'em. You want to flop 2 pair and whatever. But right now, and I'm pretty sure, Scott, it was the bottom 2 pair that people lose the most money on, according to TJ Cloutier.
Absolutely.
And that's where you lose your cash. Now another ace comes. You're screwed to trips. You know, a higher pair comes on the board after this. Their other card, their kicker, gets paired. There's a lot of ways to lose money with this Jack 8 now, and it's pretty scary. I'm not happy with it, and if there's some serious betting, I'm going to call. I know I'm going to play the hand, because how can you not play 2 pair, but I'm not going to be real happy about it.
Yeah, and the real problem here is the ace.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
If it was something else there, then I would feel a little more confident, but 9 people in this hand... Somebody has an ace. I'd be shocked if somebody didn't have an ace.
Yes.
And maybe a couple people have an ace. And that means that they have another card that's probably higher than an 8. And then we're real danger in this hand right now. So
it doesn't even need to be. It doesn't even need to be. As long as it gets paired, the aces up are going to beat your jacks up every time.
Exactly.
So it doesn't even matter.
That's what I'm saying. So that's true. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, the blinds check under the gun bets $42. Which is way more than the pot. And our hero says, I'm thinking small ace or small heart draw. Middle position calls the $42 with $45 behind. And a solid but aggressive player behind pushes for about $95 total, and it folds to us.
Oh, man. I folded this hand so fast, you would think that, you know, I was a cheap 10. I'm telling you, man, this is just trouble. You have bottom two pair on an unbelievably coordinated board. You have a royal draw, a flush draw, a Broadway draw, a straight joint draw to the jack. You have all kinds of stuff here. You have people who could easily have pocket eights who now have a set and were literally drawing the two cards. We have people who have aces who can now go run a runner and beat you, who could pair their other card for $90. Now I have to call 90 to beat three other players. You know,
I think, because you get two more streets here.
Exactly. You have two more streets, and you have the blinds behind you, and you could lose the rest of your stack here. You started with 400. You're betting a quarter of your stack on bottom two with three other players, basically saying, I'm betting a ton of money. And you don't know what that first player is going to do who bet out when it gets back to him. Maybe he shoves now, and now you've wasted $90, and now you have to put your whole 400 in. God, I don't know what that person has for money. So, yeah, this is crazy. I'm out of it. I really am. It sucks that he flops two pair, but I think if he had raised, not being results-oriented, but this is where the hand broke down for me. Just calling is where you get yourself into trouble.
Well, yeah, I think I think you agree, this is where this hand got easy for me.
Yeah.
You know, pre-flop is a little difficult because you could make a case for any of the three, really. And if you decide to raise, then you had to make a second decision as to how much. But now, you know, we got somebody that's betting way strong here. You got somebody that's calling way strong here. And then someone raising all in. Yeah, you know, there's a slim possibility that we have the best hand right here, but it's just unfathomable to imagine that we're a favorite to win this hand at this point.
No. And the other thing, too, is it almost feels like the guy who raised all in is putting his cards face up, and then it's a draw. Because he's not protecting his hand anymore with 40 or 40 something more dollars in the middle. That's not going to protect your hand. So if you already made a hand, then you know your next bet's going to have to be 40 anyway, so you might as well get it in. And if you have a draw on your next bet, you're probably not going to want to fold because you only have 40 left anyway, so you might as well get it in. So it feels like it could be a draw to me. But I need to get out of this hand. Even if they are on draws, it's just... It just feels like it's going to be a nightmare. That's bottom two.
Well, I mean, I don't want to draw against three people.
No.
You're right. They still got the blinds, too, so it could be as many as five people in the hand that I'm drawing against. And here's the other thing, too. Not raising preflop like I think we decided we would have done. We've only put $3 in this pot.
Yeah.
To me, that makes it even. I mean, even if there's like an inkling in me that thought about getting out of line and calling this, going back and thinking, you know what, I put $3 in here. A lot of danger. I'd be totally different story if I put 20 in already. Or not totally different story, but a different story.
Yeah, don't get caught up in that pot committed thing we talked about.
Yeah.
That's not your money anymore, but I know what you mean. You've only risked $3, let it go and move on to the next thing. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. So it folds to us, and our hero says, I don't think a four fold is warranted here. I think I'm ahead of the undergun, whoever overbet the pot. And even if I'm behind the all-in player, the side pot, assuming I get it all in, will be bigger than the main pot. And I guess that's something we didn't discuss, obviously, is that we don't have to beat everybody here. We can take the all-in player out and make some money off these other players. But still, at that point, though, I think we're drawing against those two people.
Well, we're not drawing.
We're not drawing.
But the other thing is, I don't know how much those people have. Yeah. I didn't know there was going to be a side pot. Not that would have changed my mind much, but I didn't know how much of a side pot.
Now we can talk about it. I mean, it's entirely possible that the under the gun is the one with pocket eights.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's a scary board for pocket eights now.
Yep.
Ace of hearts, jack of hearts, eight of clubs. I mean, all kinds of stuff could happen. I mean, I'm not a big fan of overbetting the pot, but at this point, if I'm looking at a hand where nine people are in this hand, and I just flop bottom set, and I know it's super vulnerable, I'm happy getting in and getting my $27 out of this thing, and maybe get one caller, and then, you know, be able to go with that. I'm not going to mess around with a $13 bet or something with that.
Yeah.
So it is possible. I mean, I'm not, you know, getting the monsters on the bed, but...
Because it's a good point. Why all of a sudden, and why isn't she afraid of that bet? What kind of person bets basically double the pot under the gun on that flop? What do they have to
There's
do?
There's no reason to do it with a draw either. Yeah, so I'm right. Fully eliminating the draw from that guy. He's got exactly. Something that he thinks is vulnerable. It could be Jack 8. It could be with the same hand we have.
It could be Ace 8. Yeah. He limped with a suited Ace 8.
Yeah.
So this is why we raise.
It has to be something. Yeah. Now, the middle position person, I think, is most likely definitely drawing. And then the last person, I think, probably has something. Something.
Somebody could have 9-10 of hearts here, you know, which is the massive draw. A lot of their outs are probably out, and they may not have the nuts when it gets to the end. But 9-10 of hearts, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So I can't agree with her saying that she's ahead. And if she is ahead, which she may find out she is ahead, you know, more power to her, but there's still 2 cards left and 6 cards out there you're going against, at least. So, I think I'm going to let this one go, believe it or not. I don't think I'm going to risk a quarter of my stack on it.
It's totally believable. So, yeah. All right, so she says, if the under-the-gun player, who has about 800, so he was the chip leader at the table, has a flush draw or a small ace, he can outdraw me, or a set of eights. If I just call, he mathematically has to at least call, and he could raise. And then he'd have control of the hand on the turn. A call would leave me with 300, and assuming the other gun in mid-position call a pot of squiggly 400 after the rake. So my general thinking is, if a call will leave me with a stack that is less than the pot size bet on the next street, I should just push. So I push for my 400.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. No way. I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh, but I meant that as like a scared laugh. There's no way I could do that. There's no way I could risk 400 on that betting pattern and the way it came down to me on bottom two pair with those draws that are out there. That's a wet board. And again, you might even be drawn dead to ace-jack. There very well could be somebody with ace-jack who didn't raise in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you're literally drawing to an 8. And even that might not even be good. I just there's
could
just
be
no
ace-jack versus 8-8, and then you're really dead.
Then you're 100% dead. So there is no way that I could have done that. That's now, of course, she does have the reputation of being, you know, but it's too late now because someone's already got 90.
I think that's the problem. Is it doesn't matter whether you're tight if other people have already shown a lot of strength.
Yeah,
I mean, it's different if one person's shown strength because they could be making a move. But we've got one guy showing strength, one guy saying, "I don't care how strong you are, I'm still in this hand," and another guy is showing more strength. Players, I should say, not guys.
Right.
So at this point, being tight doesn't really help at this point, I don't think.
No, you're right. No,
it
I
did,
don't think so.
It did pre-flop. It doesn't now.
No, it doesn't.
Or having a tight image, I should say.
Wow, so
but definitely being tight in general would be awesome right here.
I really need to know what happens now. This is killing me.
Alright, so like I said, we pushed for a 400. The under gun stands up, holds his head, says, "You have a set of eights, don't you?"
Oh.
He finally calls. The mid-position player folds with 45 behind. And the under-the-gun shows his ace-jack destroying my jack-8.
There it is, ace-jack.
Turn river or blanks and I'm felted. The all-in player never showed but mucked. It's a cash game, you don't have to show. So our final thoughts. So in a limp pot, how can I put him on ace-jack? Could I have folded? If I just called, a lot of scared cards in turn could have pushed me off the hand. Or maybe a heart on the turn would have let the under gun to me check it down. I would have saved 300, or I could have bluffed the flush to push him out. The what ifs will kill me. Anyhow, I know this is long, that's what he said, but seriously, was I supposed to go broke, or could I, a better player, have gotten away from it?
This just in, the under the gun player was my mom. Because my mom would limp with ace jack.
Oh, I do too. Actually, really, at this point, I'm folding ace jack under the gun.
But yeah.
I'm not playing it for a raise anymore, and that's why I'm folding it. So, I mean, I'm not. I'm not advocating limping. What I'm saying, though, is I think there's other people that probably aren't, that are learning that lesson that I learned and haven't quite learned it yet about ace-jack, ace-queen, ace-10, those kind of hands, and are saying, you know what, every time I raise with this, I lose, so I'm just going to limp because it's a big ace. I can't not play it. And I think a lot of people play that way now. So, yeah, I'm going to definitely give them credit for possibly having ace-jack. I mean, we talked about his possibility. I don't think we thought that's what he had, but I think it's wrong these days to think that people are going to raise with ace-jack pre-flop.
Yeah, no, you're right. And here's really two of the biggest poker names in history Doyle Brunson and TJ Cloutier. Lesson from TJ, bottom two pair lose the most money in poker. Lesson from Doyle, don't go broke in an unraised pot. And those are really the two things that you have to take from this. This pot was unraised. You can't put him on ace-jack because you didn't raise. And you can't put him on ace-jack because he didn't raise either. And so that's the kind of hand where you just can't narrow the range. So how could you risk your whole stack when you have no information? And if this guy's willing to doubly bet the pot, he's protecting something pretty valuable. And it's not just one pair. And if it's not just one pair, then he got to be ahead of your pair, your two pair, because you had bottom two. That's just, that's the way I would have to have thought about that when I was in the moment and folded my hand.
Yeah.
Right?
Makes well, sense. Sorry, Amy Bernice. She also goes by Broken Brooklyn, according to her tagline now. So. Feel bad about that, but yeah, I think as this hand continues to, the what ifs continue to haunt you, as they say they will. I mean, I think you look back and, not saying that we're experts here, but I think there's a lot of stop signs that came up in this, or at least yield signs.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, obviously, Amy, we've given you plenty of swag, so just remind everybody else to send your hands to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and if we use it on the show, we're going to give you something great, like a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Antiup. You can pick up your own decks in the Antiup store at antiupmagazine.com/shop. And don't forget to support Jay Design's new Kickstarter campaign for his new line of cards by visiting Kickstarter.com and searching for Jay Design. That's DESJGN. And I don't think there's very much time left to help him. So
yep,
get on there and help him out. Help
him. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Antiup is a production of antiupmagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.